Melt the Gilded Seams, written by Sun Discus and read by Flower Parish. This is a Batman fic, rated for teen and up audiences, featuring the relationships Tim Drake and Bruce Wayne, and Tim Drake and Jason Todd. This is a fusion slash alternate universe for the Hades video game and ancient Greek religion and lore, and contains canon-typical violence, reunions, some closure. Tim is not Robin, but he is on his way to becoming the Bats' resident cryptid demigod. This is part two of the Got a Lot to Learn series. Summary. When Tim does see Jason again, it's smack dab in the middle of a battle. One of the first things Tim says when he arrives at Wayne Manor, 5 years after swearing his soul to the underworld, is Jason here? Which turns out to be a mistake, if the way Bruce Wayne's shoulders go frighteningly tense is any indication. Bruce Wayne, and his butler, Mr. Pennyworth, are not thrilled to see Tim. That's probably an understatement. Tim has gotten very good at diplomatic understatements in the last few years. Most servants in the House of Hades are surprisingly chill, but some of the higher-up entities have a couple thousand years of ego to contend with, not to mention the other gods. So Tim can tell Mr. Wayne is not happy that Tim is here. Fair enough, most reasonable people wouldn't want a servant of the underworld turning up on their doorstep, and even less happy that Tim asked about Jason. Tim should have handled this better, should have stuck to the careful, unemotional explanation he had planned. It's just, Tim thought Jason might be able to vouch for him a bit if Jason remembers him, make this easier on everyone. And maybe half a decade among the dead hasn't dimmed Tim's childish desire to see Robin, but not even a bone hydra could get him to disclose that part. After a long stretch of silence, Mr. Wayne says, coldly, "There is no one here by that name." Tim's heart beats strangely now, slower or faster or hardly at all, depending on what realm he's in. It's been almost racing ever since he clawed his way back into the alleyway earlier tonight, but now he feels it stumble. No, Jason isn't dead again. Tim would know. But he can't imagine what else would make Mr. Wayne say it like that. "Oh," Tim says. Then, instead of getting to the point, "Is he okay?" "That is none of your concern," Mr. Wayne says, and Tim, who regularly interacts with the literal god of death, distantly marvels at how someone can be so menacing while wearing nothing but silk pajama bottoms and a sling cast on one arm. Mr. Pennyworth, too, stands there in the flickering shadows of the foyer like a statue carved of stone, which gives the impression that he, more than Mr. Wayne, is the guardian of the house. Tim can feel the presence of chthonic weapons somewhere out of sight, meant for fending off monsters but would work just as well on him, so he needs to tread carefully. He'll just have to find out about Jason later. "All right," Tim says evenly, as Mr. Wayne and Mr. Pennyworth continue to stare at him. Tim has some idea what he must look like. Unnaturally pale, one eye glowing red, wearing a red and green chiton covered by a plain brown cloak that's clearly out of fashion with the surface and splattered with a bit of undead monster viscera at the hems. He's older and visibly less human than he once was. After Tim was claimed by the Court of Hades, he became officially tethered to the underworld, making trips to the surface even more complicated. And then years started slipping by while he was busy learning everything he could about his divinity and mastering his new duties. The underworld runs an average of 27% more efficiently now, thank you very much. It's not that he forgot about his promise to Jason, or that he stopped missing Gotham. When he dreamed, it was always of rooftops and fuzzy moonlight and the silhouette of tree limbs outside his bedroom window that had always been bare, no matter the season. But time passes strangely down below, and it wasn't until his return became urgent that Tim realized just how long it had been, just how much he had changed. Never mind about that. I'm here because I have information about a threat to Gotham, and I need Batman's help. Mr. Wayne blinks, the first hint of emotion that isn't hostile he's displayed since Tim arrived. "You're here for Batman," he says in a blank sort of way that Tim thinks might indicate surprise. "To talk to Batman, yes," Tim says. "Sorry, I should have said, I already know that's you. We can move past that part. I don't have a lot of time left on the surface, so if you're not kicking me out, then you should let me explain sooner rather than later." Mr. Wayne shares an unreadable look with Mr. Pennyworth. "You're not here for Jason," Mr. Wayne says, this time in a way that's clearly a question even though it's not, which Tim finds frustrating. It reminds him a bit of the mind games the other gods enjoy when they send him their little messages trying to curry some sort of favor that will end badly for Tim if he doesn't play his cards exactly right. "No," Tim says, and hopes the truth is the best option here. Mr. Wayne shifts forward in a way that is entirely Batman, and Tim makes himself stay still as Mr. Wayne says, "You haven't come to take him back." It's Tim's turn to stare blankly. "Take him back? Take him... oh, no. The underworld has no more claim on Jason, no more than on any other living creature. Besides, collection isn't my jurisdiction. That would be death. I'm more on the administration side." "Then why did you ask about him?" Tim beats back a sudden wave of exhaustion. It took over a day to reach the surface, and then another few hours to cross the city while staying out of sight, and Tim is not immune to this particular trapping of humanity. He wishes Jason were here, or Dick Grayson. He wishes he'd had the foresight to write a full report and hand it over, despite the risk of it being intercepted on his way out. He wishes, for just a moment, that he didn't know he was anything but human. "I thought Jason might vouch for me, so you could take me seriously. And I thought I might say hi if I could." A small crease appears on Mr. Wayne's brow. "Why would you..." he starts, but Mr. Pennyworth interrupts. "It seems we have forgotten our manners this evening," Mr. Pennyworth says, angling himself toward Tim. "You clearly already know who we are, but we have not yet asked for your name." "I'm Tim," Tim says, trying not to sound impatient. "Nice to, meet you." Across from him, Mr. Wayne's posture loosens in shock. "It's you," he says. Tim glances at Mr. Pennyworth, who looks less shocked but just as stunned. "Pardon," Tim says, and tucks his hands behind his back so he doesn't do something ill-advised, like throw his hands up in exasperation. Another trick he's had to learn. It will take weeks to build up enough power to come back again, and he can feel the slight tug in his blood that means the underworld has caught his scent. "I really..." "Tim," Mr. Wayne says. "The child demigod, the one who claimed to be from Gotham, the one who brought Jason back." "Oh," Tim says. "So Jason did mention me. That's good." "Mention you," Mr. Wayne repeats to himself. "You..." He spent 2 years trying to find a path to the underworld himself. Now Tim does jerk back, a jagged half-step. "Why would he do that?" "To find you." Somehow, Mr. Wayne's gaze is even more intense, locked on Tim, but it's no longer as hostile. It's more... odd. He doesn't remember much from when he was gone. Only you, and the knowledge that a demigod child traded himself to the underworld in his stead. He couldn't... There was a long time, after he came back, when he couldn't reconcile the fact of his death. He wanted to make it right. "No," Tim says numbly. "No, he can't... There's no making it right. Not like that. I was on borrowed time anyway. I just sped up the process. I think I always would have had to end up..." He waves at himself, the clear indicators of something that doesn't fully belong to the surface. The monster guts on his clothes and the immovable laurel wreath twining through his hair, marking him for the House of Hades. "There's nothing he could do, then or now. I wouldn't allow it anyway. And it's not like... I'm not dead. I'm not a prisoner. I'm just tethered somewhere else, and I know what I am now, I know how much I can do, and I never could have learned that here." "I don't know if that will make him feel better," Mr. Wayne says quietly, after a long moment. But perhaps you can tell him that next time. Tim nods. Next time, then. If nothing else, he's been welcome to try again. Now, Mr. Pennyworth says, voice oddly thick, please do come inside properly. The foyer is not the ideal setting for lengthy conversations, and I believe you have information for us of some urgency. Yes, Tim says, stepping forward to follow Mr. Pennyworth. Before he gets very far, Mr. Wayne holds up a hand to stop him. Jason's overseas, with some friends, Mr. Wayne tells him. He's okay. Thank you for asking. That's good, Tim says nonsensically. I'm glad to hear that. That he's okay, I mean. Thank you. The ghost of a smile passes over Mr. Wayne's face. I'm glad as well, he says. Now, Alfred is right. Come in and tell us everything. The problem, and it's a big one, is that Typhon is about to escape. Tim isn't sure who let the monster out, but once he'd confirmed the hushed rumors for himself and realized Hades didn't plan to acknowledge it, Tim got to work remapping the surface entry points, finding the least conspicuous routes, but not least bloody, despite his best efforts, and crafting a new obol necklace strong enough to shield him for at least a few hours on the surface so he could find Batman and warn him. Because Tim is 90% sure a new monster gate will be opening somewhere under Gotham in the next few months, and Typhon will be close behind. The gods have been quiet. Bruce Wayne, call me Bruce, please, says now, spreading archival maps of Gotham across a broad swath of dining room floor at Tim's request. He'd quickly gotten over his shock at Tim's explanation about Typhon, or at least hidden it well. There have been small stirrings up here, but nothing of this magnitude. My lord does not want this information to get out just yet. Tim keeps his voice steady, peering down at the maps and ignoring the instinctive prickle on the back of his neck. There are no agents of the underworld to hear him. Probably. It doesn't look good. Better to have it come as a shock than make it known he was aware yet unable to stop it. Your lord, Bruce says softly. Your father, Hades. Tim looks up. He wonders if his red eye glows as brightly here as it does in the underworld. He wonders if Bruce is unnerved by it. If he is, his expression doesn't change. I serve in his court, Tim agrees, and he sired me, technically. And so he holds your loyalty, Bruce says. Again, it's a statement without judgment, the question hiding in its neutrality. He holds my loyalty because he let Jason live, Tim replies with the same even tone. Then, with a faint smile, though not all of my loyalty, clearly, since I'm here. Bruce hums, almost to himself. You are here. But not for long, Tim reminds him. Are these all the maps? Let's focus on the southwest quadrant. They work together, mapping out likely entry points throughout the city, quiet and focused, for nearly an hour until the pull from the underworld becomes too strong for Tim to ignore any longer. He shifts back, touching the obol around his neck and feeling its last wisp of power drain away. He has a backup, far less powerful, more of a stopgap if his necklace gets taken or destroyed, but it would only buy him a few more minutes, best not to risk it. He opens his mouth to say something, not totally sure how to announce he's about to get sucked through a pool of blood and disappear. Bruce beats him to it, looking up and saying, you have to go now. Yes, Tim says. It might look a little alarming, but your floors will be fine. Bruce's eyes sweep over him as he frowns slightly. Then he says, the obol, you have a second one, in your pocket. Tim doesn't ask how Batman knows that. I do. May I keep it? Bruce asks. I'd like to see if I can improve the design, boost its power somehow. Tim blinks. For what purpose? To create one that allows you to stay indefinitely, Bruce says. Tim looks at him for a long moment, long enough that he feels a vicious tug in his blood, the shift of stone beneath his feet, as the underworld prepares to take back its servant. Why? Strategically, it would be ideal for you to stay longer next time to share your knowledge as we prepare for the attack, Bruce tells him. And yes, that makes sense. Tim pulls the backup obol from his pocket and hands it over. But Bruce keeps speaking as Tim does, saying, "And because you saved Jason. You, not your lord. Not your father. You. And one day I expect I'll have reasons beyond that, too." The dining room tiles bubble and shift, and Tim is gone before he can puzzle out what Bruce means by that. But that's all right. Tim will return. He'll have time, someday, to figure it out. When Tim does see Jason again, it's smack dab in the middle of a battle. Turns out, when Bruce said, "Jason's overseas that night 2 months ago," what Bruce meant was, Jason's on a mission in deep space, the details of which I am mostly unclear on despite my extensive attempts at prying, and I won't be able to contact him until he gets back. This was something Jason did a lot lately, Tim gathered. Go to space. Go to Atlantis. Go to ground. Be generally unreachable for weeks or months at a time. Always return. This return happens to coincide with the height of Typhon's appearance, which is probably a pretty big shock after being off the grid for 10 weeks. Tim is reeling a bit himself, and he knew this was coming. They'd prepped for it, mapped the possible emergence points, and had a plan ready in time and everything. In the end, Typhon broke through at the mouth of the Gotham River, which makes for a hellish, no one appreciates puns in the underworld, but Tim still makes them. Battleground, but they're ready. They're prepared. It's still, Tim admits, kind of terrifying. Usually when Tim's in deep shit, it's because of the smaller monsters. Tiny, vicious spirits that are hard to strike and harder to evade. The larger ones tend to be more mellow, generally. For example, the giant bone hydra, Tim had learned, mostly just attacks when you try to pass through its assigned gate or encroach on its favorite warm patches of rock, where it likes to lounge in a way that reminds Tim of topside lizards sunning themselves. Typhon is, it seems, the exception to the rule. It's big, forgoing the snake limbs of lore and instead taking the form of a many-limbed crustacean monster long enough to curve out of sight and wide enough to churn the Gotham River into a dangerous, stormy froth while the razor-sharp legs on its other side burst over the embankment and terrorize the whole East Side waterfront district. Oh, absolutely fucking not, one of the new-to-Tim bats, Stephanie, had said when the monster first crested the surface. Her voice only shook slightly, which Tim found impressive. Six legs, that's my limit. We gotta get this thing out of here stat. Tim doesn't consider himself particularly squeamish anymore, but he has to agree on the legs thing. There are far too many, and they ripple like some sort of ungodly house centipede when Typhon crests the surface. The legs also have the annoying habit of separating from the monster's body and still wreaking havoc, only stopping when they've been cut down to individual segments. Tim's staff has a retractable blade at one end, thank the gods, but he can't help but think of how he could have refitted it if only he'd known the thing would show up as a giant aquatic arthropod. At least he'd accurately predicted Typhon's goal. The monster is pushing inland, where it will be able to whip up storms and flood surges and all manner of very, very bad things that will wreck multiple coastlines and probably sink Gotham altogether. So the plan is to keep it at bay, and submerged, until Batman can trap it. An achievable goal, Tim thinks, swinging his staff through another armored limb the width of his own thigh. Maybe. Possibly. Hopefully. There's a flash of red and blue in the sky. When it comes to the chthonic magic Superman, the literal reincarnation of Helios, apparently, and wasn't that a wild story to piece together, is even more vulnerable than Earth's mortals. So Bruce has him focused on getting civilians to safety while Batman and Nightwing and Batwoman rig up the divine netting Tim sourced earlier this year. It's a variation of what he uses to ensnare some of the fouler underworld monsters when they're being a nuisance too close to Tim's little hiding-slash-napping spots outside the palace, only way, way bigger. That leaves Tim and Spoiler and Batgirl and Signal to hold the line against the seemingly never-ending limbs clawing up the riverbank. They do okay for a bit, but it's a numbers game, and the limbs are slowly outpacing them when a copter that definitely doesn't exist on the public market bursts through the cloud cover. It dodges the police and news helicopters to swoop low over the bank, and someone rappels down right into the fray. Tim had just been dragged into the water by a particularly nasty claw hooked through his belt, so he misses the moments between the copter lifting away and the newcomer hitting the ground. When Tim surfaces, coughing and sporting a brand new rip down the leg of his chitin but otherwise no new significant injuries, he climbs up to the concrete jetty and comes face to boots with someone who wasn't there before. The newcomer is tall, nearly as tall as Bruce, wearing a hooded leather jacket and unsheathing twin swords with black fire licking up the blades. "Fucking hell," the newcomer yells to Spoiler. "Talk about a welcome back party." And it's Jason. Tim can't see his face, but he'd looked up news reports over the last few months, seen the suit prototypes Bruce keeps stashed in the cave. Gotham's mysterious hooded hero who protects Crime Alley as his own, who appears and disappears at random, who, at some point over the years, started wielding dual swords imbued with chthonic fire. Not something most mortals can do, and something Tim desperately wants to study. Is it because of Jason's time in the underworld, or did he undergo specialized training somewhere? Or is it something about the swords themselves that makes it possible for him to... Point is, Tim knows it's Jason, even before he sees the blades come out, or sees Spoiler whirl around and relax at the sight of him. Tim pushes down every initial reaction he has, shock, relief, nonsensical embarrassment, and hauls himself over the jetty wall, tumbling gracelessly next to them on the gouged pedestrian walkway, and barely pausing before rolling over to stab the end of his staff through an armored limb, trying to wriggle up after him. Jason jerks back. Who the fuck? And as much as Tim has been desperate to see Jason again, as many questions as he has, and as much as Tim wishes this weren't happening when Tim is drenched and coughing up half the river, they don't have time for this. Spoiler, Tim rasps. We've got another section surfacing by the marina. He plants the blunt end of his staff on the ground and pushes to his feet. Careful of them snapping the piers. Don't get caught on the end. I'll hold the line here. And you... He points at Jason as Stephanie throws up a little salute and books it to the marina. Go north and keep these legs from reaching Nightwing on the bank. You have to cut them at the joints, at every joint, or they won't stop. Got it? Good. He's off running before Jason can say anything in response, but he does see Jason make his way upriver, cutting down Typhon's legs with an ease that Tim, wrenching his staff out of yet another limb, absolutely does not envy. With Jason, the tides, turn in their favor. They don't let Typhon make headway up the bank, and when it's forced further up the river, Batman and Nightwing spring the divine netting, and then, not quite as suddenly as it began, but certainly more quickly than seems possible, the fight is over. When everything goes quiet, Tim finds himself at the wide, crumbling mouth of what used to be a footbridge bordering the pier. He braces one hand against what's left of the railing, staring into the incongruously calm river below. He's breathing hard, and he can't seem to let go of his staff yet, but he's in one piece. Spoiler and Batgirl are down the block, and he can hear Signal calling to them while they survey the waterfront, so they're also in one piece. And upriver, the divine net glints gold as Typhon's form slowly disintegrates. That'll take care of it for, like, the next century or so, hopefully. A few dismembered leg segments still twitch on the rubble below, and there's a horrible, tangy smell all around, but 50% of that smell is just the Gotham River on a normal day, so all in all, that went pretty well, Tim guesses. It could have gone way worse, at least. A faint noise behind him, boots hitting stone more quietly than they have any right to. Tim turns, expecting Bruce, maybe, or Nightwing, but it's Jason Todd again, standing right there with his hood down and an expression Tim can't read at all. There's something a bit wild about it, something frayed at the edges, but the rest of it is lost on Tim's post-adrenaline brain. Oh, Tim says, when Jason doesn't do anything else. Hey? His voice is scratchy from his impromptu swim earlier, and he clears his throat, tilting his head to look back at Jason. Tilting his head way further back than he should, he thinks. Wasn't Jason short, back when Tim pulled him out of the underworld? Tim's seen blurry pictures of him running around the city, sure. Obviously he had a growth spurt, but this just seems excessive. Jason also has two new scars that Tim can see, one through his eyebrow and one across the bridge of his nose. 5 years and change, Tim reminds himself. Of course Jason has changed. So did Tim, so maybe Jason is looking at him like this because he doesn't even recognize. Jason moves, oddly graceless, and grasps Tim's shoulder, spins him to face the dying sun. Tim blinks hard as Jason's gaze sweeps over him, flickering from the laurel wreath to the chitin spattered in monster guts. Tim has a moment to feel embarrassed again about the fact that his wardrobe is so obviously red and green and yellow, and finally settles on Tim's mismatched eyes. It's you, Jason says blankly. It's really you. Before Tim can figure out what he's supposed to say to that, he sees it. One last leg rising up, sharply silhouetted against the sunset, right behind Jason. Jason, who, still looking at Tim, does not notice for a crucial split second. Tim lets his divine energy surge, using the last of his reserves to vault onto the jagged bridge railing and jam his staff through the middle joint. The impact jars up both arms, but he manages a full cut, severing the claw from the flailing limb. Not, however, before the claw embeds itself deep in his chest. Ah, Tim says, looking down. That's not ideal. The bridge tilts sharply. Or, no, that's Tim tilting, slipping from the railing as his vision tunnels. He waits to hit the ground. It'll hurt, but it'll be efficient, at least, since he's headed down below anyway. But it never comes. Instead, he thuds into something too soft too soon, his fall cut short by a pair of arms under his back, his knees. The side of his face settles against warm leather. Tim blinks, the world reorienting around him. Jason, he realizes. Jason caught him. Thanks, Tim says fuzzily. Something wet spills out of his mouth when he speaks, blood and ichor dribbling down his chin. Gross. By the way Jason rears back, wide-eyed, he must think so too. Sorry about the blood. You should probably dry clean your jacket, is what he was going to say, because ichor stains are the worst, but he breaks off, choking on something. Probably part of his own lung. The pain is already distant, muted under the bone-deep pull of the underworld. Against the skin of his chest, tucked deep under the folds of his chitin, Tim feels his new obol crack and shatter. Hey, Jason is saying, his voice desperate and oddly warped as if they're underwater. Tim scrunches his forehead. Did he fall in the river again? Hey, fuck, don't you dare close your eyes. B! Whoops. Tim forces his eyes open again, but unlike the fight against Typhon, that's a losing battle as the underworld surges beneath them. He has enough time to see Jason's stricken expression, only inches away and so similar to the agonized look on his face the last time Tim saw him, and then the darkness rushes in, and Tim doesn't see anything else for a long time. It takes another 2 months to come back. His father's healers actually have to get involved with this one, and his spirit is a bit loose and rattling around outside of his body for a while, and after he's fully corporeal again, there are some angry lectures and questions to artfully dodge, and then he still has to actually heal. Hades doesn't seem angry about Typhon's defeat, at least, and Tim was able to orchestrate it all without embarrassing his father's court. So, mostly, he gets a lot of irritated blustering in the 5 minutes Hades has to spare before he forces Tim on guarded bed rest and turns to more important things. Bed rest sucks, and as busy as Tim keeps with paperwork and the never-ending secondhand court gossip he bribes from his guards, Tim's thoughts keep slipping back to Gotham, to the destruction along the waterfront, which could have been so much worse, but wasn't great either. And to Jason, somehow larger than life and so horrified as the blood claimed Tim again. Tim hopes it didn't ruin Jason's boots. There's still a twinge in his side when he finally slips away from the palace again, and it's been long enough that he has to remap some of his hidden surface doors, but he emerges into Gotham's watery light, only slightly out of breath. There's a call button in the alley now, hidden in a panel behind some of the bricks, plus a coat and a cell phone and an external charger. Bruce insisted on multiple ways for Tim to signal, to call for a ride if he needs one. Today, though, Tim just takes the coat and walks the 90 minutes to Bristol, tracking down by the river to see the aftermath. There's a lot of scaffolding on the waterfront buildings, and the footbridge hasn't been rebuilt yet, but people are out and about in the late afternoon, unruffled as only true Gothamites can be. As always, it gives Tim a pang of homesickness, which is probably silly, but for once he pauses and just lets himself feel it. Lets himself look at the city he somehow still belongs to, even if it no longer belongs to him. And then he keeps moving. Alfred answers the door when Tim makes it up the drive. "Timothy," he says after a long pause, eyes piercing. He reaches to take the cloak folded over Tim's arm. In a rare show of emotion, he lingers as he does, giving Tim's shoulder a brief squeeze. "Dear boy, we've missed you." His voice is somehow warm and admonishing all at once as he drops his hand. "In the future, I would ask that you refrain from dying in my grandson's arms." "Noted," Tim says awkwardly, following Alfred inside. "Is this a bad time? I know it's been a while, so I can come back, if that would be better." Alfred pauses, looking at Tim over his shoulder. "It is never a bad time," he says, firm. "However, most of the household is currently out. I will let them know you've returned. I am sure they would appreciate if you stayed long enough for them to see you. I know Master Bruce has been hard at work making a new set of obols. And in the meanwhile, Master Jason is in the garden." Oh. An almost childish apprehension squirms in Tim's gut at that, but he doesn't protest as Alfred loads a tray with tea and small sandwiches and sends Tim outside with it. Jason is, indeed, in the garden, on the side of the estate that faces the city, which is just starting to glitter under a purple and orange-streaked sky. He's sitting with one knee up and the other leg dangling off a stone bench as he frowns at his phone. In a hoodie and soft black pants, he cuts a very different figure than in his tactical gear on a riverbank, but he's still unmistakably strong, all coiled power in a way the boy Tim briefly knew was not. And Tim is different, too, strong enough in his own way to hold up against a large portion of the underworld itself, but not like that. His years among the dead have only made an already strange Tim stranger, and he's suddenly all too aware of it as he crosses the garden path. Jason looks up as Tim approaches. "Alf," he starts, and cuts off when he sees Tim, freezing. Before, when he realized who Tim was, Jason's expression was open and wild. Now it's like a door slammed shut, and all Tim can see is guarded. Tim says, and gods, there goes any chance of making an impressive second impression. He sighs, resigning himself to feeling like the awkward, overeager kid he hasn't been since he was sworn into his father's court. He lifts the tray in his hands. "Alfred made tea." Jason slowly uncurls his other leg, setting it flat on the ground, and tips his head back. Sitting on the bench like this, he's the one looking up at Tim, and Tim finds it more disconcerting than expected. Not that he'd expected exactly, but anyway. "Are you also here for tea?" Jason says, oddly brittle. "Or are you just here to drop it off before you die again?" "I," Tim says, pauses. "I should have a few hours before I have to go back." The line of Jason's mouth tells Tim that this was not the right answer. He doesn't move to take the tray. "You're really acting like this is normal. You got fully impaled 8 weeks ago, and now you're here with tea like everything's okay now. Seriously. You weren't supposed to care," Tim nearly says, then realizes how that sounds and swallows it back. "I mean, I was fine, eventually. Surely Bruce told you it wouldn't be permanent." "Bruce," Jason says, incredulous. "You think Bruce knew you'd magically be okay after that? You think he hasn't been tearing his hair out for weeks now? He's barely spoken to any of us, holed up in the cave trying to make some sort of lasting obol without even knowing for sure if you'd be alive to use it. Because, again, you got impaled by Typhon." Tim isn't sure why this is suddenly his fault. It's not like he'd planned on getting impaled. "I'll talk to him. I'll make it clear that the chances of me being permanently killed probably requires some sort of divine intervention, so every other case can be presumed temporary." "That's not the point," Jason braces his hands on his knees but doesn't move to stand. Apparently, while I was away, you became a regular here. Bruce trusts you, and the only way you can be here is if you sneak away from your literal god of a parent, and there's no way for anyone to help you in between. You just show up, get yourself hurt, and then you're gone. And now you're here again, out of nowhere, holding a tray of tea in the garden, acting like you have no idea how fucked up that is. And, well, Tim doesn't know what he was expecting, but that probably puts a lid on any false hopes he had for this visit. Gods, he's exhausted, and more than a little humiliated, and sad, because Jason Todd is in front of him in a non-peril situation for the first time, and Tim has so many questions, and Bruce had made it sound like when Jason got back he might be happy to see Tim, but clearly that was unfounded optimism on Bruce's part. Tim is usually the expert on unfounded optimism, both having it and recognizing it, which comes in handy when navigating court politics, yet has utterly failed him here. "I see," he says stiffly. "Well, now the typhon is dealt with, I can limit my visits to emergencies only. For now, I'll wait inside. If you don't want to see me, I should be gone by the time Bruce starts patrol." He sets the tray down on the end of the bench and turns toward the manor. Movement behind him. The barest pressure on his sleeve, like Jason caught the fabric between two fingers. "Wait," Jason says. The pressure disappears. Tim waits. "It's not," Jason starts. Tim glances back to see Jason leaning forward, his mouth twisting. "I don't know you." Tim winces. "I know." "I don't know you," Jason repeats, "and you've died for me twice now. Technically, I watched it happen, both times, and I can't, you really messed me up, you know that? I couldn't figure out why this kid would give up everything, just to bring me back, and then again, why the same kid threw himself in front of me to take a monster claw through the chest, and I had to feel his heart stop under my hands. So, do you see what I'm saying? It's not that I don't want you to come back, it's that I don't understand why you keep doing it." 2 trips ago, Tim had finally thought to check the date. He's 19 now, by surface years. Hardly a kid. Also, he's technically never died, just contracted his soul to the underworld and been discorporated for a bit. But instead of pointing out either of those facts, he says, "Isn't that what you do?" "What?" "You died trying to help someone." Tim doesn't know the details, but he knows this has to be true. The way Jason leans back, eyes wide, is only confirmation. "You sacrifice yourself for other people all the time. You put yourself in danger. You take hits to protect people from monsters. Usually the people you save don't even know, but you still do it. You have for years. So, if I'm fucked up, then so are you." Jason just looks at him for long enough that Tim debates going back inside after all. Then, "Well?" Jason glances away. "No argument there, I guess." Tim lets out a small huff. "Glad that's settled." "Yeah." Jason scrubs the back of his hand across his mouth. You don't have to go. Inside, I mean. Unless you want to." Tim considers this. He considers his own words, too, because he might be starting to understand what Jason is unhappy about, and it might not be the simple fact of Tim's presence after all. 2 things first, Tim says. Jason eyes him, still guarded, but not quite as sharp-edged now. "All right." "Thing number 1, Tim says, holding up a finger. "I am responsible for my own choices, even the ones I made when I was 13. I don't regret them, I wouldn't change them, and no matter how much of a guilt complex you have, they're mine. Okay?" "I hear you," Jason says, which isn't a yes or no, but Tim is too tired to press right now. He'll revisit it later. He'll have time to do that, he thinks. "Thing number 2? "Thing number 2, Tim echoes. "I do acknowledge that the first time we met was not under ideal circumstances and probably set a non-optimal tone for future encounters. So, I'd like to try again." He steps back toward the bench, stopping just outside Jason's space, and holds out a hand. "Hi, I'm Tim, Undersecretary of Domestic Affairs for the Court of Hades, also illegitimate son of the God of Death, and occasional wrangler of monsters. Nice to meet you." Jason stares at Tim's hand. Then he stands, slowly, and holds out his own. His skin is cool against Tim's, which means Jason has probably been out here too long, because most people run relatively hot to Tim. "Hi, Tim," Jason says. "I'm Jason, formerly Robin, formerly dead, also an occasional wrangler of monsters. Nice to meet you too." They stay like that for a moment, hands loosely clasped. They probably make a pretty weird picture, Tim thinks. Hem in his borrowed coat and chiton, Jason in his sweatpants, both of them greeting each other like they've only just met here in this private garden. Like they've never fought a bone hydra together, or a titanic monster. Then, Jason drops his hand and steps back, clearing his throat. "Since you're staying, we should..." He waves a hand at the tray on the bench. "Alfred will kill us if we let his tea get cold." "If he does, I'll just drag us back," Tim says casually, and this time the look on Jason's face is totally worth it. The end.